And a very good afternoon to you. Welcome to Tuesday's Richie Allen Radio Show, broadcasting live from Salford City. It's 4 o'clock here in the northwest of the UK. Join in with me during the course of the next God only knows how long by sending a message via the website or via the app.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. This is your Richie Allen Show, live from the magnificent city of Salford.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yeah, I've had a day to end all days, but I'm not going to get into that with you because I know full well you have your own problems. I'm well aware of that. You don't need to hear any of mine. Interesting day, nonetheless. Good to be with you, it always is. I'm Richie Allen, the BBG. Got a lot to talk about, me and you, over the course of the next 90 minutes or 2 hours. I've given you the contact details. Do join in with me, have your say. And we might, I'm not saying we will, a little bit later on, might take one or two phone calls, if time permits, might do that, all right? Fiddle-dee-dee. Yeah, okay, you had one of those days. Did you ever have one of those days? Well, anything that can go wrong does go wrong. But then again, it could be worse. We'll come to why it could be worse in a moment. Noticed this only a few minutes ago. Sharika Ahmed, writing for the BBC News website. Sharika Ahmed. They love the diversity over at the BBC. Hey, do you want a good laugh? Do you know what? Fuck it, I won't be on air. This time next year, I won't be on air, I don't reckon. I say that every year, don't I? And it hasn't happened, so maybe that's what I'll do. Maybe I'm offsetting the censorship by saying it's coming, it's coming, it's coming, and then it won't come at all. Fingers crossed, but yeah, feck it, it doesn't matter. Watch BBC News 24 any day. Right, the presenters usually present in 2 hour blocks. Just look at the diversity, it's hilarious. It's hilarious. It really is. Spot the white person, is all I'm saying. So here's the BBC News website, Sharika Ahmed. Good girl. Walk-in vaccination clinics will open up during Easter. Walk-in vaccination clinics. I did an about take. Is that about COVID jabs? No, it isn't. It's about the measles, because they're still pushing this nonsense about measles. Not just here in the UK, but also in the Republic of Ireland as well. Yes. Greater uptake of the measles vaccination. They're going to open up walk-in clinics beginning with Peterborough, of all the places. Nice and random there. We're going to open the first one in Peterborough. And if you haven't had a measles jab, doesn't matter how old you are, come on down and have your measles jab. Because measles is making a comeback and it could kill you, apparently. More chance of you dying by being hit by a grand piano falling from a 25-storey building than of dying from measles, but it doesn't matter. They're rolling out the vaccination clinics. And every time I hear about vaccination clinics, it makes me think, it reminds me of something that Tobias Elwood said when the COVID jabs were rolled out. Remember? Now, Tobias Elwood used to be in the army. He's a madman. He's a Tory MP. They roll him out regularly on Sky News and the BBC to ask for more money, more weapons, more support for Ukraine. Tobias Elwood, he's mad to escalate things with Russia. He's a madman. Tobias Elwood. And back during the rollout of the COVID jabs, Tobias said this about how we could get jabs into people's arms.
I don't know who wears that fluorescent jacket as the fire evacuation officer in Sky's offices, but it's that sort of person that should now be trained to be a vaccinator.
So normally, you'll have a fire safety person working for your company. Let's train that person up to be a vaccinator, said Tobias Elwood.
Should now be trained to be A vaccinator. In every business, in every school, in every charity. We should have walk-in centres that are permanently based for the moment on every high street. Part of our army should be dedicated as battalions to be trained to given the variety of support that we've already seen.
Walk-in vaccination centres on our high streets, why not? I mean, the high street is dying anyway. It's dying a death. All you've got on the high street now are shitty charity shops. He says, like a big baldy hypocrite. Because I do pop in and out of those charity shops myself, like, to find one or two bargains. But that's all that's happening now. On high streets, businesses are closing left, right and centre. hundreds of pubs closing on British High Street. So we might as well open a few walk-in vaccination centres, because, be Jesus, they hope that in a couple of years' time they're going to have a vaccine for lung cancer. That's right. An mRNA vaccine. You can walk in and say, do you know what, I don't fancy lung cancer. I've never smoked myself. The air I breathe is particularly healthy where I live. But you never, you know, don't take a chance. So go and have a lung cancer vaccine. It's all coming down the line, isn't it? Tobias Elwood will get his wish one day, maybe. There'll be a vaccinator in every business. The bloke who normally does the fire safety. Keith Laird, maybe. Somebody like that. It's coming up for 6 minutes past the hour. I'm Richie Allen. Now, I've told you that. By the way, measles my arse. Measles on the way back. Been asking around about measles. I have. Because I'm an old school journo. You get more information from speaking to people randomly than you do any other way, in my experience. Any measles? Now, measles, give over. Okay, have you been watching the cinema? Have you been watching the theatre of the absurd on Sky News, BBC, C-SPAN, CNN, ESPN, even ESPN Sports Network? Going live. We're going live to Baltimore. We've got a disaster. We love a disaster in the media. So a big bridge then collapsed. Big bridge on the over the Patapsco River, whoever named it. I hope he's burning in hell. The Patapsco River, after a container ship crashed into it. You must have seen the footage by now. The bridge snapped and plunged into the water. About 5:30 in the morning UK time, because that's all that matters really, which would be about 1:30 over there in Baltimore. And there's a big operation underway at the moment for missing people. God love them. They've pulled a couple of people from the water. All of them believed to be part of a construction crew that was repairing potholes at the time the bridge collapsed. Yep, unlike every city in the UK, they repair potholes in Baltimore. And their reward, knocked off the bridge by a big freight ship. No good deed goes unpunished, you know, as they say in Baltimore. Now, the coverage has been hysterical. It really has, right? Bear in mind where Baltimore, Maryland, really is. The UK dropped everything. The UK media dropped everything. And I do mean everything. Not just the 24-hour news channels on TV in Vision, but even the radio shows. Disaster porn. We've seen this so many times in recent years. I've regaled you, or bored you, depending on your perspective, about why the media does this and what the payoff is. The drama, the humanity, the pathos. But what made me laugh today, and I make no apology for laughing, not laughing at the misfortune of some poor pothole fixer, no, but laughing at the madness of it, was the carry-on of Baltimore's most senior politicians. They set themselves up with a sort of a newsroom, open-air newsroom, near the river shore, the Patapsco River, in full view of the collapsed bridge and the foundering freight ship. This is vaudeville, right? And they have returned there several times today to update the world's media on what is going on. This is amazing now. Happened a few hours ago. The ship foundering, right? People searching for bodies and anything else. And they keep coming back to the river's edge, to their little open-air newsroom for their briefings. I've never seen anything like it. And the world's media is there. And Britain's 24-hour news channels are giving blanket coverage to it. Just listen to this from a couple of hours ago. In no particular order. Baltimore now. The governor. The mayor. The chief of police. The FBI. And the Coast Guard. Couldn't make it up.
And we pray for everyone who has been touched by this tragedy. And their families. And all of their loved ones. But Maryland. We will get through this.
Maryland will get through this.
Because that is the Maryland spirit.
The Maryland spirit.
And that's what Maryland is made of.
That's what we're made of.
We are Maryland tough. And we are Baltimore strong.
Maryland tough, Baltimore strong.
So in the face of heartbreak.
In the face of heartbreak. I'm not going to do this every time, don't worry.
We come together. We embrace one another. And we come back stronger. That's what we've always done. That's what we'll continue to do. And that's what we're going to get done together. And we're going to pray for Baltimore.
Pray for Baltimore.
And I'd like to turn this over to Senator Van Hollen, who's done a remarkable job in our fellow delegation in providing support. So thank you, Senator.
They're swimming under the water looking for bodies. The bodies in the morgue are not even cold. This guy is thanking the senator for everything he's done. And now it's his turn at the dais, at the podium.
Thank you, Governor. As the governor said, we come together. We come together in Baltimore. We come together in Maryland. First of all, our hearts go out to all those who were on the bridge and their loved ones. We pray for them.
All they were doing was fixing potholes.
Our gratitude goes out to the first responders.
Don't forget the heroes now. The heroes of this little parable. The first responders, heroes, every one of them.
Who, as we speak...
They didn't save anybody, by the way.
...are out there continuing to conduct search and rescue operations. I want to thank the governor, the mayor...
For what?
...the county executive...
For what?
...all the people gathered here.
Thank you. Thank you for coming to this press conference.
It's part of Team Baltimore...
Team Baltimore.
...and Team Maryland. And the federal government is with them as a partner. The Coast Guard, as we speak, is also part of this mission. Coast Guard cutters, Coast Guard aviation assets. I spoke twice today with Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg. Pete Buttigieg has pledged...
Pete Buttigieg?
...that they will do everything they can to very quickly release emergency response funds for this important project. The National Highway Transportation Administrator is on his way to Baltimore if he's not here already. They will be releasing those early funds once all the parties are fully engaged.
And the chief of police was next.
Thank you, and again, to the people of our state and the people of this great city. We're with you. We love you. We will get through this together.
We'll get through it.
Thank you, Governor.
The FBI next, I think.
With that, I did want to introduce the FBI for a few comments as well.
Picture it now. They're at the river's edge, and just behind them, or just in front of them, there are frogmen and women presumably searching for bodies.
Hello, my name
is the FBI guy.
My name is Bill Del Bagno. I'm the special agent in charge of the Baltimore field office. First and foremost, I want to say that our hearts go out to everyone that is impacted by this tragedy, especially the victims and their families. On behalf of the FBI, I would like to say that we are with you, we're with Baltimore, and we're with the partners.
Can you believe this?
Every step of the way. The FBI, on very first, looking at and assessing this matter from an investigative standpoint, I want to be clear.
Well?
That there is no specific...
Well?
...or credible information......to suggest that there are ties to terrorism in this incident.
It wasn't terrorism, no. The Islamic State didn't do it. They didn't hijack the ship and do it. No terrorism, don't worry, he said.
The FBI has been part of this response from the beginning. We came within 1 hour to the command post...
And, brilliant.
...and quickly lashed up with our very strong partners all along the way. We will bring whatever resources that the FBI has to bear. We've already brought our crisis response, our victim services, and just recently our underwater search evidence recovery teams are on site. And we will continue to provide all those resources as long as it takes. And as the investigation goes on, we will take it to its logical conclusion along with our partners.
Wow.
To the people of Baltimore, to the public, I ask you to be patient as we go through this and as information becomes available to us. And lastly, I want to say thank you. Thank you to our partners. Thank you to everyone who in the FBI.
And thank you for what?
And counts on the FBI. We will always bring what we need to the people of Baltimore, and we are with you.
And then the Coast Guard got up.
I'd next like to introduce the Coast Guard.
And this is being covered live by every news channel in the UK today.
Good morning. The Coast Guard is still actively searching at this time. We are using response boat crews from two of our local Coast Guard stations, one of our helo crews from an air station in Atlantic City, and also one of our cutter crews on one of our 87-foot patrol boats. We will continue to work with our local, state, and federal partners during this tragedy.
And that was it. Man, a few words, the Coast Guard. And then the governor got back up and said this, bear in mind, they're searching for bodies. Bear in mind, listen.
This is going to be a long-term build. It's going to be a build that's going to require...
He's talking about reconstructing the bridge now.
Every facet and every aspect of our society. It is something that I can tell you, we are going to get this done. We are going to make sure that this is not just rebuilt, but that we are going to rebuild in a way that remembers the people who this tragedy has impacted, and also do it in a way that that honors the community that it serves. But right now, I could not give you any form of estimate on timing or cost. Right now, my and all of our exclusive focus is we're just trying to save lives.
We're just trying to save lives. We're just trying to save lives right now. They're down there, the divers, they're down there. So we're going to build an amazing bridge that's going to be for everybody. And it'll pay tribute and pay homage to the victims. But I can't give you any scale regarding time, and I can't give you a cost. We're just saving lives right now, said the governor, whose name escapes me, and it doesn't matter. That's amazing, isn't it? It's amazing to me that probably you and maybe me are probably the only people laughing at that, who find that absurd. That is the theatre of the absurd. It is crazy. And if you were to ask somebody living in Leeds or Doncaster or Edinburgh, do they think it's strange that they're sitting down watching a British news channel giving blanket coverage to an accident in Baltimore? You know, I'm not saying it's not newsworthy. Of course it's newsworthy. It's an interesting thing to happen. It seems the propulsion systems went AWOL on board the cargo ship. It lost propulsion, in effect, and it drifted towards the bridge, is what they are claiming. I don't know what really happened. There are other reports that 3 or 4 years ago, this very same vessel crashed into a dock when it lost propulsion as well. I can't remember where that happened. Somewhere in Europe, maybe. I can't remember. But you ask somebody, do you not think it's strange that you're getting blanket coverage of something that's got nothing to do with you? There's no way impacting on your life. It has no relevance or meaning for you. And they've just dropped everything, covering nothing else except this, and repeatedly returning to it to get these bizarre press conferences. There were three today at this hastily constructed press room in the open air on the shore of that river. Are you kidding me? What's going on? I had an argument some years ago, because I like an argument. I'm an argumentative bastard, me, and I always will be. I was being lectured by a brilliant woman called Mary Routh, camera woman for the BBC for years. She was lecturing me during a lecture at Salford Uni. She was a great lady, was Mary. And we had a big argument about it. She said to me, the reason they do this, because this was back now in 2003, 2004. We'd already had 24-hour news channels for several years. So they were doing this all the time. And she said to me, Richie, with your big conspiracy theory head on you. She said, it isn't what you think, Richie. It's because they are lazy bastards, and they love it when something like this happens, because they basically get to go on holiday. By they, she means everybody in the gallery, the producers, the editors, the copywriters, all of that, right? They just drop the... They don't even write autocue. There's no need to, because they just show the same pictures over and over and over again. And Kay Burley will say, well, we've got Jonathan Phillips on the line now. Jonathan is a retired builder of major construction projects. Jonathan was involved in building a bridge in Newcastle back in 1977. How are you doing, Jonathan? Why, I, Kay. Why, I? Jonathan, what do you think happened there? Well, Kay, the bridge was built in the 70s. They didn't expect big cargo ships to hit the bridge, Kay. Thank you, Jonathan. Let's go back to Baltimore, where Martha is standing by. Martha, Well, Kate, it's a terrible scene here. And it goes on. So my pal said to me, Mary, she said, Richie, it's all about laziness. She said, this is the reason the BBC decided to cover the snooker in the World Championships back in the early 1980s. It's because they don't have to do anything other than just sit around at the snooker with their cameras. She might have some point, but there's more going on. And I don't have the language, and I really don't, to describe what I think is going on. They want... It is a world... One world government they desire. Whoever the fuck they is or they are. That is what they want. And to do this, they must somehow shrink the world in the minds of most people. They must reduce this great, great big world we live in, which is vast and expansive, but in people's minds they must somehow reduce it and make global local. So I'm kind of channeling my great pal Mark Windows now. I think that's what it's got to do. I think that's got something to do with it. Feel free to tell me I'm full of shit, because I am at the best of times. But that's part of it, I think. And of course, this pathos bullshit, you know, these fake feelings. I just don't really give a shit, to be honest with you. I don't. I really don't. I mean, why do I care about some six or seven people who died? I mean, life is, as I've said already 16 times today, it is absurd. Yesterday, a beautiful young woman and her beautiful 5-year-old daughter went out for a walk in Plymouth and were hit and killed instantly by some fuckwit who was under the influence while driving. Life is random, it's ridiculous, it's precarious, it is obviously preposterous. It is fragile at times, you know. I went to Costa Rica back in 2002 and nearly drowned while white water rafting. Life is random. It's ridiculous. It's foolish life. The silly ways, the avoidable ways people can die. So this is a nothing story. Well, it is. It's a story. A bridge was knocked out and fair enough, right? But this blanket coverage of it. A couple of good friends of the programmes have taken a closer look at it. Don't panic. They haven't said it never happened and nobody died. At least not yet, anyway. And one of them is the wonderful Jenny Lowes. Jenny is a nurse based in Portugal. She did everything in the NHS. Everything, right? And she reckons there's a lot of very heavy symbolism going on when you look at the images of this ship and the name of the bridge and all of that. Maybe you, a dearest listener of mine, you might have some thoughts on that. But I couldn't help laugh at the spectre, at the sight of all of these politicians handing over to one another to talk about thanking one another for everything they did and about how Maryland will survive and Baltimore will get on because we're Maryland tough and we're Baltimore proud and we'll survive it. And we'll build a new bridge for those people. All while they're still searching for bodies of the pothole fixers. God love them, you know. If only we'd known that such a person existed in the real world. Pothole fixers. Salford. I don't know. The roads in Salford are like the surface of the fucking moon. They really are. If we'd have known about these guys, maybe they could have come here and fixed their potholes. And safe... that they wouldn't be hit by a cargo ship, at least not in Salford M6. It is 24 minutes past the hour. What do you think is going on there? Do you see the symbolism in it? I don't know. I've no idea. Let's say hello to Mark. Mark says the video clip clearly shows various explosions. Oh, fuck off, Mark, will you? I mean, fall out with me if you want. Fuck off. The video clip shows explosions. Where? Where does it show explosions? I've seen the video. He says it's very reminiscent of a certain event that happened in New York in 2001. It didn't take long, did it? And Mark, please take my telling you to fuck off. Please take it with a massive pinch of salt. I jest. I'm not trying to insult you. You know, sometimes shit happens, you know. Sometimes big ships lose engine power, lose propulsion, and if a big fuck-off cargo ship like that loses propulsion, it is going to float, it is going to drift, and when it drifts, it's going to pick up a bit of speed, and it's got several hundred thousand tons of weight behind it. And if it hits some rickety old bridge built in the 1970s, there's a good chance the bridge is going to collapse. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying right now on this, you know. Hi to Shane. Shane says, Richie, public service announcement here. If any listeners around South Yorkshire have any pallets, we, says Shane, have bought a small holding for growing, leading to off-grid living. Thanks, says Shane. But Shane, you've got to put some contact details out there. Send me a tweet. We'll get on it. Ardell says, Richie, the COVID madness is a new story. The NHS will no longer be testing anybody being released from hospital to care homes from April 1st. Suddenly, says Ardell, it is no longer an issue. I read that story myself, Ardell. No doubt about it. Good evening, it is good evening to Alexandra, who's just back from spending a week in Andalusia in southern Spain, loving the falling piano analogy. Well, it's true, isn't it? It's absolutely true. The odds of you dying if you contract measles are astronomical. Therefore, why take a chance with the vaccine? There's no doubt about it. Good evening to David Keane. Richie, I've seen the video of the Baltimore Bridge collapse, and it seems to look like a collapse, like a demolition project. Something doesn't add up, in my opinion. David, I refer you to the answer I gave to Mark. I'm joking. Why would they blow up a bridge, David? If anybody thinks this was some sort of deep state act, okay, I'm open-minded. Can you explain to me what the payoff might be? I don't know. I tell you what one payoff could be, if I wanted to use my imagination, expand my imagination. It's obviously going to be a bit difficult driving around Baltimore for a while, isn't it? Hey? Maybe. I don't know. Rob says, Richie, did you notice on the cargo ship that took out the bridge, all the lights went out on the ship just before it hit the bridge? And why did a bridge crumble so easily? It seems suspicious, says Rob. Again, the reason, or one reason why the bridge may have collapsed, Rob, is because the cargo ship that hit it is a beast of a thing. Couple of 100,000 tons behind it. That's all I'm saying. Lewis says, it's a pity the 20,000 children who have died in Gaza don't get the same coverage as that bridge collapse. That's true as well. Hi to Julia. But these fuckers, says Julia, will continue to send billions to Ukraine, Israel and the military and neglect our own infrastructure here. I hate them all, says Julia. Hi to Phil. Richie, stop, please, he says. Thank you, Phil. I will stop. I've said enough now today. Tobias Elwood was also the MP who became a paramedic on Westminster Bridge. He was, wasn't he? It was very handy during the Westminster Bridge attack that Tobias was there. Absolutely. Hello to Angela, who says she's recommended me to check somebody out. Thank you, Angela. That's Angela Hayes. I will do that. Scout's honour. Ian says, I'm waiting for the FBI guy to thank God and his high school drama teacher. Anthony Abbott says, looks to me like an insurance demolition. Wouldn't be the first time, would it? He says, maybe. G-Man says, Richie, with all this wall-to-wall coverage across the media, the cynic in me thinks, what else has gone on today in the world which is being ignored or not covered? Good question. Richard asks, I wonder if this accident was caused by the competency crisis. There are not enough trans black blind captains, says Richard. Yes, not enough skippers of colour in the cargo ship business. How many captains? You can imagine the recruitment companies who go and try and find captains to captain these massive vessels, saying we don't have enough lesbians in the fleet. Can't remember your man's name. The guy with the very African-sounding name who briefly worked as the BBC's chief equality officer about 4 years ago. And he did a big investigation into how diverse the BBC was. And I swear to God and to his son Jesus, if you don't believe me, look it up. He came back and he said, one of the problems is at the BBC, he said, is we just don't have enough lesbians. You know, and take that one to its conclusion. If we had more lesbians working at the BBC, bringing their life experience to our programming, your programs would be much better. They would be better served if we had more lesbians. Mark has come back to tell me he can take a joke. Thank you, Mark. Mark, I look for it again. Are you telling me there were those little plumes those little puffs of air or smoke from the bridge before the contact. I'll have to look at it a second time. I don't know. In the meantime, we shall leave the Baltimore ship mystery to better minds than me, much more intelligent people. Let's leave it to the likes of Richard D. Hall and Alex Jones. They'll figure it out in a heartbeat. Nobody died. Nothing happened. It was all staged. I'm a big child sometimes. I know I am. But sure, you'll forgive me. Been a while since I heard this one. Survivor's Eye of the Tiger. Back with more news, if you call what just happened over the last half hour news. After this one from the soundtrack to Rocky 3. We will talk a little bit about racism later on. You might remember, if you are a long time listener to the Richie Allen Show, some of those Black Lives Matter people back in the day, they talked about Rocky, didn't they? And said Rocky was racist, didn't they? Because he had this little Italian man in successive Rockies beating the shit out of these big massive black guys. Little Rocky, this Italian American, yeah. I remember watching the news report. It was on CNN and I about choked. I laughed so hard. Rocky was racist. I remember this little black girl. Little cutie she was. But she was all animated and all argumentative. I probably still have the clip. And she gave a lecture to a reporter about how racist Rocky was, you know. Just out of the blue, she brought Rocky into it. They were talking about the chap Derek. Derek, and I must be racist because I can't remember his surname. The chap who had his neck kneeled on until he choked to death. But a lot of people don't believe that happened either. So I swear I've not had a drink today. I come to you as sober as a priest on Sunday. But the absurdities, they just come flooding back sometimes. Yeah, there was a woman talking about, you know, blacks and stuff. And, you know, anyway, and she just threw Rocky in real randomly. It was the funniest thing I'd seen around that particular. Of course, I raced to record it and I played it on the show back then. It would have been in 2020, wouldn't it? When Derek Chauvin, was that his name? Derek Chauvin, off the top of my head, who, sparked the Black Lives Matter protests. All lives matter. But you can't say that either, because that's horribly racist, apparently. No doubt. Good evening to Kay. Richie, China is so bad that a Chinese company listed in Hong Kong owns Northumbrian Water. Water, for the love of God, says Kay. Something as important as that. Also, let's not mention the nationality of Jeremy Hunt's wife. But we are told China is a threat. Well, it's either one or the other, says Kay. Kay, good shout. Let's stay with China for a minute then. Because this week we learned that the Chinese, they've been cyber spying. And this is, of course, if you believe the British government, that the Chinese have been hacking into the accounts of MPs, both serving MPs and former MPs, but also it hacked into the Electoral Commission mainframe and accessed the details of 40 million British voters, apparently. Now, we talked about this yesterday. What would China do with such information is a question. Now, the answer might be, if the story has any truth to it, is that China could then employ artificial intelligence to send you and me certain news stories, to send us material, maybe on social media, as it might sway our decision when it comes to voting in UK elections. Again, I call horse shit, because the Chinese government, as I said yesterday, knows full well that it really doesn't matter who the Prime Minister of the UK is next, whether it is Rishi Sunak, whether it is Keir Starmer, Bonnie Langford, Jasper Carrot, or Phil fucking Mitchell. It doesn't matter, because the agenda proceeds in any case. And the Chinese are playing their part. I'd love Phil Mitchell to be Prime Minister for a bit. Anyway, so the Chinese have come out fighting finally. Here is a spokesman for the Chinese Communist Party. Comrade. This is Victor Gao, and he is speaking to LBC Radio's Andrew Marr. The Chinese say, it's not us, honest Injun.
If anyone in Britain thinks that the Chinese government or the authorities at large would have any interest in hacking into the British politicians' accounts to gain information, I think that allegation is ludicrous. And if anyone...
Now, funnily enough, I don't agree that that allegation is ludicrous. That allegation makes perfect sense. As we said yesterday, all of these countries have, they possess intelligence agencies. And if they're not sitting around scratching their arses and eating donuts, you would imagine they would be trying to access the private emails of sitting MPs or sitting peers in the House of Lords. Now, I know what you're saying. I can hear you. You can't have your cake and eat it, Richie. Either they're not interested or they are. Well, I'd imagine they might try to hack into the email accounts of politicians looking for blackmail-worthy material, maybe. So this one I can buy. I'm not saying the Chinese have been doing it. I'm saying I could buy that one. It's the hacking into the Electoral Commission I don't buy.
The Chinese government or authorities want to do that. It's completely out of their mind. Whether there is strong interest in domestic politics in Britain, yes, of course, me included. But whether anyone wants to hack into the British system to influence the election result, it's completely ridiculous. The best China can do is just to sit tight and watch over the election and observe the results.
Because it doesn't matter who wins.
Rather than doing anything stupid to interfere in the election process.
Nonetheless, the British security services have spent 2 years or more looking at these allegations. Clearly, somebody was hacking into the MPs' accounts and indeed into the Electoral Commission. So if it wasn't China, then who could it have been? I mean, I guess it could have been Russia or it could have been non-state actors.
I do not know. I think your intelligence system should come up with the evidence to convince the whole world who is doing what to what system. I would only say about the Chinese system, I would say China is fully engaged in so many things domestically, as well as in dealing with a headwind in the international arena, and no one has any additional bandwidth to care about the domestic elections in Britain.
We don't care about your domestic elections. Do you know what made me belly laugh today? And like I said, I've not had a drink. He said that twice now. Maybe he has had. No, I've never, ever come on the air with a drink or under the influence. No, I'm just in a weird mood today. I've had a mad day. Do you know what made me laugh most about listening to Victor Gao? If you listen to him carefully, close your eyes, he sounds like he's dubbed. He sounds like he's dubbed, doesn't he? He sounds like one of those Chinese voiceover artists speaking in English, dubbing one of those Chinese movies, doesn't he? He sounds dubbed. Have a listen.
China is the largest trading partner with more than 130 nations in the world.
Doesn't he?
China's manufacturing output is larger than the combined amount of the United States, Germany, France, and many other countries combined together. Therefore, for China to deal with Britain as a major trading partner, it's not surprising whether China-British trade should be made more balanced. That's, of course, will be a better result. But for Britain to be cut off from China as a trading partner, I think the loss will be both the British loss as well as the Chinese loss. And I would be strongly against anyone attempting to cut off British trade with China because it's suicidal. It's not making any sense. And the British people are well known as very pragmatic people, realistic people. And you want to cut off yourself from the largest market in China in the world? Come on, that's not realistic.
He sounds dubbed, doesn't he? He sounds dubbed. Listen back to it later on. He sounds dubbed from one of those Chinese karate movies. Yes, your kung fu is very good, but mine is better. One of those. Right, that was the Chinese response to the allegations by the British government that they were caught red-handed trying to interfere in elections here and also by going after the private emails of MPs. To your messages again. To your messages again. Mike says the conspiracy in the bridge story is the cover-up that a woman was driving it and they don't want to bring it up for those reasons. Ah, Mike. You never know, though. Billy says, Richie, I wouldn't be surprised if the pilot of the Baltimore cargo ship was drunk, having sex, or high on drugs. It's happened before with ferry disasters in Europe, says Billy. Good evening, KJ. Building bridges back better. Higher, more robust, and if necessary, only allow ships that fit sail through. Maybe today's a good day to brush over all the bullshit we've been subjected to since March 22nd. What else happened on the 22nd, and why does that number keep reoccurring, says KJ. Good evening, Tim. Putin did it, says Tim. Putin. I'm kind of surprised, Tim, that somebody hasn't blamed him for it. No doubt about it. Elizabeth says, Richie, the ship was named Dali. In 1945, Salvador Dali painted a painting, The Broken Bridge and the Dream. Is that true, Elizabeth? Well, that's an interesting coincidence, isn't it? David of the Ray-Bans variety says, Eye of the Tiger, first single I bought with my pocket money. Thank you, David. What would I have done if you hadn't told me that? Anthony says, Richie, did you see the two-faced irony in the media today over the torture of the alleged terrorists in Russia? Guantanamo Bay, anyone? That's a good point. You know that when these alleged terrorists were captured and then brought back to Moscow, before they were brought back, they were tortured very badly. One of them had his ear chopped off and he was fed his own ear, wasn't he? Something as disgusting as this. And the media, of course, here is certainly going to town on it, accusing the Russians of torture and crimes against humanity. But as Anthony makes the point, they weren't so quick to condemn what was going on in Guantanamo Bay. Well. To be fair, the left-wing press like The Guardian and The Mirror certainly would have had plenty to say about it, Anthony, I think, if memory serves. Hi to Darren, who says, Richie, it was George Floyd. Yeah, who was Derek Chauvin? He was the police officer, wasn't he? George Floyd, you see. I told you I've had a mad day today. So there's absolute abject racism right there, you know. I thought the black dude's name was actually the name of the police officer who murdered him by kneeling on his neck. And I know a lot of people don't believe that. So yeah, George Floyd, how could I not remember that? It's one of those days. Good evening to Emma. Right, more news, if you can call it that, on today's Richie Allen Show. Fallout then, continuing fallout. The United Nations has called for a ceasefire. Draft resolution, you know this. 14 countries said yes, and the United States abstained, which is breaking with tradition. Usually the United States is all in with Israel. But they've called for a ceasefire, and they've called for the immediate release of hostages being held by Hamas in Gaza. The deputy mayor or mayoress of Jerusalem is not impressed. She's a mad woman. Her name is Fleur Hassan. She was speaking to LBC Radio's Jabba the Hutt this morning. Do you want to hear a radio presenter so beset by cowardice that you can hear his lip trembling? Listen to this vacuous, empty-headed, gelatinous, grotesque gargoyle of a man, Nick Ferrari. No balls. Balls gone. Balls absent. Couldn't take on this woman, Fleur Hassan, because he's a coward. She's a crazy woman, a real ally of Benjamin Netanyahu. And as I said, she's the deputy mayor of Jerusalem.
Let me ask you something else, Nikki. If it was your child in the...
She called him Nikki. I would have gone straight in there. Who the fuck are you calling Nikki?
Let me ask you something else, Nikki. If it was your child in those dungeons, what would you want your government to do to get your child out?
I doubt if I would still have my sanity if my children
exactly.
were caught up in it.
Well, we know you have no balls, Nick.
What wouldn't you want your government to do to get your child out of that hellhole?
I understand that. I don't know if killing other children helps matters, but if we move more to a global...
Well done, Nick. Well done. I don't know if killing other children helps matters. But then he loses his balls again when she comes back at him.
I don't know if killing other children helps matters, but if we move more to a global...
We don't go to kill other children.
No, it's an unfortunate byproduct. I accept that, but it is...
There is zero intention.
She said, no, we don't go to kill children. And he says, I accept that, instead of saying, you don't get to come on my radio show and vomit out lie after lie after lie. You're on my radio show now, love. You've killed nearly 16,000 children in the last 5.5 months. You don't get to come on here and say that you're not trying to kill children. You are trying to kill children, and you're doing a fucking good job of it, right?
No, it's an unfortunate byproduct. I accept that, but it is...
There is zero intention to kill innocent civilians.
I know, but that is an unfortunate byproduct.
Imagine referring to dead children as a byproduct.
It's an unfortunate part of a war we did not start.
But if we move to the global aspect now, are you not fearful that it could seem Israel will become isolated, Deputy Mayor? You now have this vote, the first time the vote has gone through, and the US, an abstention. That surely shows that there is a degree of isolation for Israel, Deputy Mayor.
He's woeful, isn't he?
Well, I'll tell you who is not.
He's worse than O'Brien.
Complaining about us trying to get rid of Hamas. And that is the moderate Arab Sunni countries who understand
but if
who's
we could,
behind all okay. of this.
If we could stay
they're
with the
quiet,
UN, do you not
they're
think...
They're not complaining. And in yeah. fact, they want us to get rid of Hamas, as do Egypt and Jordan.
14 council, okay, 14 council members voting in favour of the ceasefire resolution. The US abstaining again. Lastly, Deputy Mayor, and I'm very grateful for your time, do you not think this risks Israel...
He's very grateful for our time.
Israel looking very isolated.
Maybe it does, but at the end of the day...
At the end of the day, we couldn't give a shit. We'll carry on killing kids and men and women... Until they're all gone. She didn't say that, by the way. She never said that. But that's what she's thinking. Fleur Hassan, the deputy mayor of Jerusalem, speaking to a completely inept Nick Ferrari, who referred to dead children as a byproduct. Of what? Genocide? It's 11 minutes to the top of the hour. Good evening to Jan. Climate change caused that ship to to lose propulsion. And then to drift into the bridge, says Jan. Thank you, Jan. That's as good a theory as any I've heard today. Kaz says, Julie Green Ministries. Who the hell is Julie Green Ministries? Posted on March the 2nd, 2023, a bridge will collapse and be in the news, says Kaz. Who the hell is Julie Green Ministries? Kaz says, this is no accident. And it will be exposed who did it and why, saith the Lord, says Kaz. I've just watched the video myself. The boat definitely turned and hit the support, says Kaz, who's an expert in the movements of drifting massive cargo ships. Kaz, take it with a pinch of salt. It's now 10 minutes to the top of the hour. It's perfectly plausible to me that a ship which seemingly lost propulsion earlier... Let me find that story while I'm on with you now, if I can find it live. Hey, listen, two more high-profile Conservative MPs have jumped like rats from a sinking ship. Robert Halfen and James Heapy have quit the government. They announced they were stepping down, resigned from the government. Halfen said that he was going to quit as an MP anyway, and this will... fuel the theories that the Conservatives will go into the next election, which is very, very soon, with a new leader and a new Prime Minister, because the knives are out for Sunak. I don't know if any of this is true, but that's what they're saying, that he is on the brink now, Sunak. And there have already, in recent weeks, letters have been sent to the famous 1922 committee, letters of no confidence in Sunak. If there are 50 such letters, it triggers a vote. He has to be submit himself for a vote as to whether MPs have confidence in him or not. So it's all collapsing for the Conservatives. So it is, according to the BBC News website right now. I'm going to take another tune, take some water. When we come back, more news. We're going to talk when we come back a little bit about... we're going to hear more. Before we go anywhere, we're going to hear more. I want to hear more on Israel. The chair of the Labour Party is Annalise Dodds, right? She was on Politics Live today, BBC Two. Labour has had its issues with, you know, with Israel and Jewish identity. And, of course, Jeremy Corbyn was hounded out of the Labour Party. And many Labour members were hounded out because of accusations of anti-Semitism. A lot of it was nonsense, of course. Most of it, if not all of it, was nonsense. So Annalise Dodds, what says the chair of the Labour Party about the news that the United Nations has called for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza?
Well, Labour did call for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire, and in fact, Parliament voted for that. That was slightly lost in, unfortunately, some of the kind of political ramifications that went on following that vote. But we thought it was very important that Parliament sent out that clear message, because the situation is desperate. As Conor set out, unfortunately, we see now what are developing famine conditions. We see an appalling humanitarian catastrophe. And it's right that now, we would have liked to have seen this happening earlier, but that now the UK government is supporting those international calls for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire.
So a politician's answer from Annalise Dodds basically said absolutely nothing in 30 seconds. Okay. Here's Jasmine El-Gamal. She is a former US government advisor. She told LBC that Israel has committed the same mistake that the United States government committed after the September the 11th attack. This is kind of interesting. Jasmine El-Gamal.
I come at this from a specific perspective, which is that I'm an American. I worked in the U.S. government for 8 years. I served my country. I was a young, 20-something maybe year old on 9/11, if that. I think I was 19, actually. It pained me to see what happened since October 7th, because these are exactly the same mistakes that we made. I mean, on September 11th, we had the world's sympathy. We ended up making huge mistakes that really...
Mistakes, killing about 3 million people, directly and indirectly, is a mistake. It's a byproduct, I suppose.
Changed the world when you think about it. I mean, moving, in the years and decades afterwards. And that's one of the first things that President Biden said to Netanyahu. He said, don't make the same mistakes that we did. And unfortunately, what we've been seeing is not only mistakes that I believe are going to cost Israel its security for decades to come, but certainly have devastated and destroyed Palestinian lives, Palestinian heritage, culture, institutions, educational institutions, universities, hospitals.
Jasmine El-Gamal speaking to LBC. The time is 5 minutes now to the top of the hour. You're with the Richie Allen Show, live from Salford City. I'm Richie Allen. Time for more music. Back with more of your comments. And then we'll talk a little bit about freedom-restricting harassment. The fallout, that's my buzzword today, fallout. Sarah Khan, the government's advisor on social cohesion. You know, she released a report and said that freedom-restricting harassment is a huge problem. Something needs to be done about it. So we'll listen to some interesting audio and then we'll talk a little bit about racism and apologising for racism. Very important. Here's Casey Musgraves. And the aptly entitled Oh What a World. Love this song, love this artist. Music from Casey Musgraves, that's Oh What a World on the Richie Allen Show, Tuesday's edition. Hey, listen, there's a little bit of news, by the way. Next Monday is Easter Monday. It's a bank holiday, so I won't be on air, but don't panic. It's just one of those things. I do take the bank holidays. I know you won't panic. I know you'll get over it. Tuesday, I'm giving over most of the show to a debate with a gentleman called Gerald Cutney. Or Cutney. I don't want to be rude to Gerald. I certainly wouldn't be. I'm not sure if it's Cutney or Cutney. He's an author and he's basically a chemist, a professor of chemistry. And he's written a book about climate denial in American politics. And he thinks that climate denial is very serious because Gerald believes in the theory of anthropogenic warming. He believes that man-made CO2 is endangering the planet and our existence. He believes it, and that's his thing. So he put out a tweet looking for a climate brawl. I think his tongue was in his cheek when he said climate brawl. But I took him up on his offer and I said, listen, if you want to come on this programme, we can have a good old debate, a good old chat, really, in a professional manner. I went to great lengths to explain to him that while I completely disagree with what it is he believes, he'll get plenty of time to explain why he believes it on the programme, and that we don't do that horrible, awful, shouty Piers Morgan nonsense. Anyway, he came back a very friendly bloke and he said, yeah, let's do it then. It will be interesting. Next Tuesday, Gerald Cutney will be on the programme. One or two people asked a very good question. They said, Richie, why didn't you reach out to one of the scientists you've interviewed previously, people like Ian Plimer, to debate Gerald? And that's a fair question. My answer to that is, I certainly don't have the knowledge of somebody like Ian Plimer. Of course I don't. Ian Plimer has probably forgotten more about it than I have. it is something I've researched myself for years. I've interviewed a lot of people on it, both climate evangelicals and so-called climate deniers. I've read most of the literature on it. I've got my ducks in a row. I know the points I'd like to make, the questions I'd like to ask Gerald Cutney. So I'm going to have a bash at it and we'll see how I get on. But as I said, it's not about winning or losing or embarrassing people or scoring points. It's about listening to people, you know. The fact is, whatever I think about climate change and the theory, and of course I do not believe it, and I believe that it can be demonstrated to be fake, to be a hoax. I believe this. I'm also totally aware, acutely aware, that there are lots of men and women, many of them in academia, who do believe it. And it isn't because they are being paid off to believe it. Not everybody is paid off. There is middle ground as well. You know, I think one of the things Gerald Cutney believes is that the climate deniers are all basically in the pay of or in the pockets of big oil and gas. Now, I'm going to take him up on that on Tuesday. It's one of the first things I'm going to say to him. Say this: you must know this is untrue and it's also very unfair. Not everybody who says climate change is not man-made is saying so because they are bankrolled by big oil and gas. That is bullshit. Equally, not everybody who says climate change is real and we better do something about it is some sort of shill that's working for the Gates Foundation or for Klaus Schwab. You know, there's a middle ground. I think this guy, and I'm reading his book at the moment, is genuine. And I like genuine people, whether I agree with them or not. So that's next Tuesday. Should be interesting. Should be fun. I told him the programme is very interactive and that he should expect a lot of questions and comments and points, and that I would be absolutely fair, and I will be fair. So next Tuesday we'll see how we get on. Good evening to William Henderson. Fair question, by the way, about why not get Ian Plimer or somebody maybe further down the line, but I'd like a crack at Gerald myself. Okay. It's much more interesting than being the moderator. And if I'm the moderator, because of my innate, I think I have an innate sense of fairness, I'd probably be harder on Plimer, to be honest. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. The bridge collapsed. PDQ, says Joe. Don't know what PDQ means, but then I've had a mad day. I am slow today. William Henderson, it's lovely to hear from you again, William. Richie, can't help but wonder, given the timing of this bridge incident, will Russia be blamed? And then he says, incoming smart bridges, maybe, maybe, maybe. Faisal says, I'm looking forward to the Baltimore No Boat theory. Yes, right. Diane says, hello, Diane. I saw footage early in the morning, about 8:30, and I could swear there was no ship at all at all. She didn't say at all at all. Next time I looked, the ship story was out, says Diane. Wayne says, the press conference, Richie, sounded like a massive exercise in backslapping, a mercenary propagandist photo opportunity. Excellent, Wayne. You put it better than I put it. Those were the terms I was searching for in my mind. Yeah, a big backslapping photo opportunity full of pathos and fake sentiment. Absolute bullshit. Wayne says to show the world how wonderful and saintly everyone involved in a position of authority is. Why didn't they thank the diversity officers? That's right. I don't know. Patrick says we shouldn't be too surprised about the coverage of the Baltimore incident. After all, we do live in bizarro world. Yeah, absolutely. Anto says measles jab. Is there any way of knowing it's for the actual measles and not one of the COVID jabs they can't get rid of, says Anto. I mean, Anto, do you know what? I don't even want to think about that. The implications of it. We know they're capable of doing the most disgusting things. We know they're capable of telling lies, like George W. Bush was told to lie about the aftermath of September the 11th. Bush told these whoppers, that Iraq was somehow involved in September the 11th. And everybody in the world who knew anything about politics and knew anything about the various factions, political factions of Islam in the Middle East, you know, Sunnis and Shias, We all knew it was the greatest load of bollocks of all time when Bush said there was some involvement by Baghdad. And yet they used that bullshit as the pretext to attack Iraq. Yeah, they said weapons of mass destruction too, but they did link Saddam to September the 11th. And they killed at least 1 million people there directly, and maybe 2 million more indirectly. They'll do anything. So are they capable of saying, here's a measles jab, children, and it might be something else entirely? I suppose they are capable of it, but I don't even want to think about it, to be honest. It's too horrible, isn't it? Yeah, very good. Faisal came back to say climate change proponents might not be directly paid off, but their careers would be a lot more difficult if they didn't. It's been like this since the 1990s. That's a fair point. That is a fair point. We do discuss the academic funding and stuff. How do researchers and would-be PhDs, how do they get their funding? Well, they get their funding largely from many of the same institutions. Faisal makes a good point. If you step out of line, it might be the end of your research funding. Okay, it is 8 minutes past the hour. You are listening to Richie Allen. Now, Sarah Khan, and by the way, I was actually considering doing one of those deals I do with you from time to time. About 3 o'clock, I was considering crying off the show and maybe doing a program on Friday in lieu of it, because I've had a crazy day. I had very little time to prepare anything for today because I just had a mental day. It was crazy. And I wasn't in the best of form as we were approaching the deadline for the show. But I'm glad now I stayed on, to be honest, and came on, because some of your comments are interesting. What about Jenny and symbolism around this Baltimore crash, this great big old cargo container ship? What do you reckon? Anything in that? Let me know. Now, Sarah Khan has been she's a dame now. Long time, you know, working in and around British governments. These days, she advises Rishi Sunak on social cohesion. Just think about that for a minute. She's there to advise him on how, basically, I said, it was a bit of a stupid line I used yesterday, to kind of turn communities into Stepford communities, where everybody walks around everybody else on eggshells. You know, everybody walks around on eggshells and is very careful all the time about what they say around everybody. Social cohesion. Basically, kind of, not physically, but somehow emotionally lobotomize. There's a good way of putting it. To emotionally lobotomize entire communities. You see, we used to be very robust. We used to take each other on. We used to take each other on when it came to our ideas, didn't we? And okay, sometimes it smarted a little bit. Sometimes, you know, sometimes somebody said something that was a bit close to the bone, and heaven forbid, we were offended. I've been offended over the years myself and smarted a bit, but we got over it. We dusted ourselves down. And eventually we learned not to be too precious about our ideas. That's how it used to be. But they want to change this. And they want a population or a populace that goes about in terror at offending anybody about anything, particularly around their identity. So this mad woman, plenty of mad women around today, Sarah Khan, she has identified the rise of and the risk of freedom-restricting harassment. Right? Fuck me. And this is where, you know, politicians and individuals are being subjected to hostility, to abuse, and to hatred. And they are being subjected to hatred to silence them and to prevent them from expressing their views. Now, the great David Icke would call this an inversion, because, of course, the opposite is happening. This is what they're doing to those they are accusing of freedom-restricting harassment. It's the government, and it is the media that is gaslighting people and harassing them so that we, the people, will become silent and that we will become acquiescent and go about like Stepford communities. Did you ever see the Stepford Wives, no? Did you ever see that? It might even have been a made-for-TV movie. If it wasn't, I apologise. But it has the look of it. It's a wonderful little bit of satire, really, isn't it? About how all of these women in this town, so a couple moves to a beautiful town, it's idyllic. And everybody is so wonderful in the town. Everybody is so nice to one another. Until they figure out that the men in the town are controlling the women. Maybe it was some sort of feminist commentary, the movie, I'm not sure. But anyway, the women have been biologically altered by the men. They've been operated on and turned into these sweet little nodding, obedient creatures. And that's the kind of society they want. They want us all to go about permanently fucking grinning, right? Lest you be suspected of something. They want you grinning and they want you being nice to everybody at all times. Don't challenge people, because people's identities now are going to be protected characteristics anyway. I've prattled on too long. So this is a big deal. So speaking about this today, Philip Davies was on Philip Davies was on GB News. He's a Tory MP. He's kind of experienced. He's been around the block. Have a listen.
I think the bit that was slightly worrying from my perspective was that actually one of them had made an appointment to come and see me.
I should have set this up a little better than I did. He's giving an example of freedom restricting harassment. He's going to talk about how people rocked up to his constituency office to complain about the Conservatives' inability to condemn Israel. So let's start it again, Baldy. Okay.
It was slightly worrying from my perspective was that actually one of them had made an appointment to come and see me yesterday as a surgery appointment, saying that she wanted to talk to me about fly tipping.
Mm. Right.
And so I'd made an appointment to see her and she came in, but then came in with three other people who sort of came in mob-handed, and they weren't wanting to talk about fly tipping at all, they wanted to talk about Palestine. Mm. And that is a slightly unnerving part of it, because obviously we make surgery appointments for people in good faith and all the rest of it. And
making your appointment with your MP under false pretenses. Have you ever done that, by the way? Have you ever desperately wanted to see an MP because you wanted to criticise him or her or challenge them, and in order to get in, you gave a false reason. You lied, basically. He said these people said they wanted to come and see him about fly tipping, but in reality, they wanted to hammer him about Gaza.
And obviously she'd lied in I mean, to be honest, if she'd said to me, I want to come and talk to you about Palestine, I'd be perfectly happy to talk to her about Palestine. She didn't say she wanted to, you know, she didn't need to do that, but she did, and then came in mob-handed with other people trying to sort of video what was going on.
Really?
So I sort of kicked them out.
Did you kick them out or did you have a conversation?
No, I had a conversation, then I realised what they were, and I kicked them out. But I went outside to see the demonstrators.
Yeah, I saw that.
Which was quite ironic, because they were chanting Philip Davies, you can't hide. And I thought, well, I'm not hiding. I'm literally stood here. I think they'd rehearsed it. Not expecting me to go outside to see them. But
it sounds very much to me like Philip Davies, probably a half decent chap, even for an MP. It sounds to me that the harassment that he was subjected to didn't restrict his freedom in any way. It sounds to me like he dealt with it pretty well, you know. Get out of here, you old feckers, lying to me about fly tipping, and all you want to do is have a go at me about Gaza. And then he went outside and he spoke to them, and presumably they went away. Fine, where's the problem?
So I think they need to change their lines for new rehearsal. But look, I don't mind. There were some people I recognised there from the constituency. There were a couple there who were perfectly reasonable. I could have a reasonable conversation with. But there were some that were utterly unreasonable.
Utterly unreasonable. And you know what? Sometimes we have to deal with unreasonable people in our lives. We can't legislate for them. Bringing a bill to Parliament to deal with unreasonable people. Imagine debating unreasonable people. How do we deal with unreasonable people? Well, we'll accuse them of freedom-restricting harassment. And we'll ban them. Good evening to Corky, who's listening to the show. He's going with Mike Rocock. Hello, Mike and Corky. They're having a few pre-match drinks ahead of Scotland versus Northern Ireland in Glasgow. That's right, there is a friendly tonight in Glasgow. Keep up the good work, he says. Thank you, Corky, and I don't understand the last bit of your message. Maybe you'll drop me an email and explain it to me. But have a great night at the football. It's a big night for Wales. Tonight I am a Welsh man, although my Polish listeners might be annoyed at me saying that. Wales play Poland this evening in Cardiff for a place at the European Championships in Germany this summer. But because of the proximity of Wales and because I know a lot of Welsh people, I'll be cheering on the Taffies. Go on, the Taffies. Good evening to my pal, the window cleaner, who says, Richie, you could have put Piers Corbyn up against the author for a debate. Again, yes, I could, of course. Absolutely. I take that on board. But I decided no. You have to understand, my friend, the window cleaner. I've been bitching for at least 2 years about the opponents of, well, we have a certain set of beliefs around things like climate change. And I have bitched about the fact that our opponents won't come and debate us. And now we have the opportunity to have a chat with a guy. So I couldn't pass up the opportunity for a good old intellectual and robust debate. Yeah, I'm calling myself an intellectual now as well. I'm getting away with it. Bob says, sea levels. Yes, mate, I've got it all, Bob. I've got plenty to get into with the climate change author. No doubt about that. Mac, pretty damn quick, PDQ, pretty damn quick, well done, thank you. Thank you, everybody. I'm not down with the abbreviations and the kids and all of that. Simon Marks is looking forward to hearing that debate. Thank you, Simon. Let's talk then about race. What was funny today, and I'm not going to subject you to any of it, is that James O'Brien, don't groan, don't yawn, just listen. He's a bearded little twerp who presents mid-morning radio for London's biggest conversation, LBC. These days they say leading Britain's conversation. They can go and take a running fucking jump right there. Because in the iTunes and Spotify charts, The Richie Allen Show is beating every one of their presenters except one, and it fucking kills me. Do you know the one I'm not beating? You've guessed it. It's the bearded twerp who presents mid-morning shows for LBC. I can't get ahead of O'Brien. There are times when I'm really close to him in the daily charts, but then I drift further away. And it pisses me off. Because think back to when the IRA blew up the hotel in Brighton. Terrible thing. I don't advocate violence. I don't think it's funny. But they said a very spooky thing. They said that Margaret Thatcher has to be lucky all of the time. We've only got to be lucky once. I've only got to beat James O'Brien one time. That's all. And then I'm going to go to town on him. You know, because they've got millions. Global Radio is a massive, massive international network. Cross-promotion. They have billboards all over the UK. And I've got fuck all, basically. And I'm beating all of their presenters, Ian Dale, hammer him daily. Who's the other idiot? Andrew Marr, hammer him. But I'm boasting. Of course I'm boasting. But it is true. I do beat them every day. But I can't beat O'Brien. Anyway, James O'Brien believes that white people should apologise for historical slavery. Shouldn't we? And that, not only that, but if you don't agree with this, you're a racist. Now, for an hour today, I will subject you to none of it. He had lots of people of colour on. People of colour. They came on to justify why politicians and people should apologise for slavery, even though they had nothing to do with it whatsoever. And most of us, we think that slavery is a terrible idea. That people should enslave other people. It's a bad idea. Anyway, this nice chap called David phoned in to say he disagrees with politicians and others apologising for something they really had nothing to do with. Now, O'Brien is his usual disgusting self, but that's not what I'm trying to highlight. I'm trying to highlight this thing, this paradigm that we have entered, whereby you must be seen to call it out, you must agree with the minority, or you will be seen to oppose it, and therefore you will be identified as a racist. David sounds like a lovely chap altogether. Listen.
I'm a little bit infuriated about the idea that if you don't apologise for racism, you're racist. Then.
Very good, right? I'm infuriated. He's heard all the people for an hour say, if you don't apologise, you are a racist, even though you didn't do it. So he's annoyed by this, and he goes on.
Slavery was abhorrent. It's a stain on anybody that was involved.
We all agree with that.
Surely the greatest thing from here that we could take from this is to learn from it, to understand it, to accept that it was a brutal thing to have done and it never happened again.
Very good, David.
What benefit is an apology from Rishi Sunak or Kate Middleton? Well,
You've just had an hour of people telling you,
David. You must agree with them. Their lived experience. If they say an apology must come from people in the 21st century for something that happened 4 centuries ago, you have to believe them. It deteriorates from here.
Wait, what did you hear that you disagree with?
He just explained it, dickhead. He just explained it. What's that word that rhymes with stunt again? He just explained it. It's preposterous for anybody to apologise for something they had no hand, no act, nor part in. Cloth-eared, Muppet, what do you not understand?
Well, I took exception to... I am not a racist person.
That's what racists always say. So just, no, it's a simple question. You've just heard an hour of people answering your question completely directly. What did you hear that you disagreed with?
You just heard an hour of propaganda, David. Why don't you agree with it?
I heard the dislocation. I heard the...
So what did you struggle with that you heard? What did you disagree with?
I struggle with what difference is somebody who wasn't involved...
But they've told you.
It's a fantastic question. What the fuck difference does it make to somebody who was not involved apologising to somebody who never suffered racism? This is so... absolutely ridiculous. It's almost laughable. People who never suffered racism, but their great-great-grandparents did, or slavery, let's be fair. I'm completely open to the idea that some people from minority backgrounds do sometimes suffer, or suffer is a weird word, but they do maybe experience or witness racism. I'm not denying that. I'm sure it happens from time to time, but I don't believe it's endemic at all. What the guy is saying is, isn't it ridiculous for one group of people who had nothing to do with racism to apologise... Sorry. For a group of people who had nothing to do with slavery to apologise to a group of people who never experienced slavery. That is ridiculous. That's all the guy is saying. It's a fair point.
But they've told you. It's institutional.
It's institutional.
But is the government institutionally racist? Is the royal family institutionally racist?
O'Brien doesn't have the balls to say what he wants to say here. He wants to say yes, but he doesn't have the balls.
Is Unilever institutionally racist?
The benefits that they enjoy today are a consequence of the institutionally racist practice of slavery.
The benefits they enjoy today are a direct result of the constitution of the institutionally racist... structures that, you know, went on 300-400 years. It is so ridiculous, this concept.
I don't want to be rude, but if you haven't understood this by now, I don't think I've got the skill. You can't say it's rude until I've finished.
You don't want to be rude, but if I don't understand, well,
by now, I don't think there's anything I can say that will help.
If you don't understand that when you're told something is racist or anti-Semitic, that you take it on board and you swallow it and you accept it as the gospel, David. Anything else is racist.
Well, fair enough. Okay.
Because you've chosen not to understand. But one thing
you've just heard an hour
of explanation and you've chosen not to understand any of it. But we can agree on one thing. We can agree on one thing, can't we?
Well, we can agree that it's abhorrent.
You're definitely not racist.
James, well, you try and paint me as I am, but...
Mate, I'm just repeating your own words back to you and agreeing with you completely. You've listened to this hour of radio where black people have explained the resonance and importance of slavery and the value of acknowledgement and apology in the...
20 years ago, a presenter carrying on in that manner would have been warned by a programme controller or a head of programmes. Now, I've had the head of programmes job. I'd have hauled him into my office after he came off air and said, trying to ridicule and humiliate people and going ad hominem on them and not listening to the points they're making and engaging with them is not acceptable. And if you continue to do it, I'm going to rip your fucking arse off air and put somebody else in there. It's terrible, terrible what's happened to broadcast radio in the UK, isn't it? Listening to that absolute shit. Not taking the guy on, and this is the essence of ad hominem, not taking him on the guy's central point, which is, it's foolish for people who didn't do anything wrong to apologise to people who never experienced it. It is utterly mad, Ted. So you can't really take him on because David is 100% right. So you've got to go after, you know, playing around with him, interrupting him. But sure, you're a bit racist, really, aren't you? 27 minutes. It is past the hour. Going to take another tune. When I come back, I'll read your comments. And then we might just wrap. This is the Richie Allen Show for Tuesday, the 26th of March, 2024. Do me a favour, before we do move on, listen to this for me, please.
Ask not what the BBG can do for you, but what you can do for the BBG. Support the Richie Allen Show now at richieallen.co.uk.
Right, and thank you so much for your messages. They are pouring in, and that's nice, that, isn't it? It's very good. Hello to Fred, who says, Richie, Stevie Wonder has denied all involvement in the bridge disaster. Ah, come on, Fred. Thank you, Fred. Nigel says, Bridges Lives Matter. Hi to Adam, who says, Richie, if you want to beat the climate guy, he says, get Mr. Icke on. Well, that presupposes, Adam, that David Icke knows more about the origins of the climate change hoax than I do. I doubt it very much. David was certainly onto it before me. David is older than I am, but David doesn't, I wouldn't imagine, know any more about the architects of the hoax and how it works and how it has spread through the last 3-4 decades. No more than I do. David has written about it extensively, and David would do a good job with him, but I'll do a better job, I think. It remains to be seen. We'll see next Tuesday. Chris says, Jeff Buys Cars. Who's Jeff Buys Cars? Was on a podcast with some great factual info about electric vehicles. Thanks, Chris. I'll check it out. Music, when we come back, I'll read more of your comments because a lot of them have come in. And then I think we'll wrap for this Tuesday. Yes. This is music from the late and truly great George Michael. Music from George Michael, Praying for Time, and the Richie Allen Show. 27 minutes now to 6 o'clock this Tuesday. Felt warm. It was warm today. Very mild around Salford. It was lovely, so it was. Your message is, Elizabeth came back, symbolism. The Francis Scott Key Bridge was named after the bloke who wrote the Star Spangled Banner. True. It was erected at the approximate point where the British anchored to shell Fort McHenry during the War of 1812. The song, Star Spangled Banner, is very symbolic of a time when survival of the United States was precarious. Now, says Elizabeth, the Russians have exercised the ability to knock out American submarines, rendering them useless using electromagnetic pulse weapons. The power went wonky on the Dali freight ship. Was it an EMP attack? Was it payback for the concert attack in Russia? That's Elizabeth. Very interesting. I have no idea. I genuinely don't. Mike asks, does this nonsense on O'Brien's programme mean that I can demand an apology for anybody who ever upset me? Of course it doesn't. It sounds like an argument at a funeral about what somebody once said about something, which has no consequences on the current situation. And then he says, O'Brien is an idiot. He is a detestable idiot at times. There's no doubt about it. And thank you to G-Man for your message. It's very long, that. I don't know if I can read all of that out. But it's about the collective effects of changes in the Earth's movements and how those changes in Earth movements affect the climate over millions of years. Yeah, these are things I will be getting into, no doubt, next Tuesday in the climate debate. No doubt about that. Thank you for all of these messages. I really appreciate them. There's so many of them. I don't want to miss anybody. Scaramouche says, the ship, the bridge incident might have been P. Diddy and Prince Harry on the run. Do you know, I didn't read that story today. I glossed over it, but I saw something to do with P. Diddy and Prince Harry and women claiming that they'd been sexually assaulted. Not by Prince Harry, I don't believe, but by sexually assaulted by people they met at parties. We're talking about Sean Combs. One time Puff Daddy, then P. Diddy, and then Sean Combs. Apparently he's being investigated over things that went on at his parties. William says they've been pushing the measles jab for weeks now at my college. It's amazing this, isn't it? They're asking for people to check their vaccination status. People in their 20s and 30s. And if they find that they didn't have a measles jab or a secondary jab, they should go now and have it. It's absolutely ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Number of you have been talking about Climate the Movie. It's a very well-made film, isn't it? And I interviewed Tom. Was it Tom Nelson, producer of the film, on the programme late last week, wasn't it? It was late last week. He was very good. It's a very good film. And it is available for everybody to watch. To watch. YouTube, is it? BitChute, you can watch it on Rumble, it's out there, it's everywhere, no doubt about it. It's very, very good. Okay, brilliant. That's about it for me, really. I'll have a very quick look through the BBC News website, and I'm going to take my leave of you a little earlier today. Like I said, it's been a mad day today, all going off. I was supposed to be interviewing two guests today, but both of them have rescheduled for next week, so I'll be busy next week. Just one of those days, and I had a lot to do outside of the show as well. A disturbing story, no doubt about it. And I know I've been criticised over the years for not featuring this story as often as maybe some people hoped I would, but it is the Julian Assange story. There's never been that much for me to cover, really. You know, the United States wants Assange to be extradited there to face charges of espionage, because when he was running WikiLeaks, he published materials given to him by Bradley Manning or Chelsea Manning. Thousands and thousands of documents he published, including videos which showed the US helicopter gunships killing journalists and civilians. There's no way, there's absolutely no reason for the UK government to say, yes, okay, we will hand this Swedish national, Australian national, he's an Australian national, isn't he? And he has residency in Sweden, doesn't he, as well? Forgive me now if I've mixed up some of that, but my heart is in the right place. There is no rhyme or reason why the UK government should agree with the US authorities and hand him over. But it looks like he's in trouble now. You know, he's been appealing at the High Court against the extradition order, because there is an extradition order in place. It was signed by Priti Patel. What a bastard she is. When she was the Home Secretary, she said, yeah, yeah, by all means, he can be sent to the United States because he published documents which embarrassed the administration at the time. It is state retaliation. There's no doubt about that. Or no doubt about this, I should say. Anyway, the High Court judges have said today, and I think this is the beginning of the end for Assange. I don't mean he's going to die, but he's going to go to the US, because they have said if they are given assurances by the authorities in America that he will not face the death penalty, then they will, you know, maybe put him on a plane. I think it's pretty likely the US authorities, to use that term again, will probably say, okay, yeah, we will give you a guarantee that whatever, when he faces trial, he will not face the death penalty. And I think his goose is cooked, because they will put him on a plane and send him to the United States of America. I've been criticised over the years for not covering it more often, but there's not been very much to say about it, really. He was holed up in the Ecuadorian embassy, wasn't he, for many years. He left the embassy when it became untenable for him to continue to stay there. He was immediately, this is back in 2019, immediately arrested, and he has been held in UK prisons since, which is an abomination. It's outrageous. Nearly 5 years. This guy is not a criminal. He's done nothing wrong except for embarrass the US government and its intelligence agencies. And I don't know what else to say about it. It's depressing shit, isn't it? that Assange is going to end up going to the States, where he'll be put on in some sort of show trial where he has no chance, and he'll probably be given 10 or 15 years in prison. He'll probably spend 7 or 8 years in jail, maybe a bit less. And I imagine when he comes out, he will be a shell of a man, because I imagine his confinement at the Ecuadorian embassy and his 5 years in prison here in London, he's probably not well, that man, I would imagine. In any case, it's awful. It really is awful, and I don't know what else to say about it. It's actually quite maddening, because there isn't anything you can do about it, you know? Well, at least there isn't anything I can see that we, you or I can do about it. So there you go. That is it for today. Thank you for listening to my rambling nonsense. I so much appreciate it. Back tomorrow with 2 very interesting guests, including Andrew Barr. Andrew is a Jewish lawyer. He's been on the programme before. Really interesting gentleman. Much to discuss with him. It'll be a busy and interesting show. I'm full on Thursday as well, but for the life of me, I can't remember. Again, it's been one of those days. The little bit of housekeeping. I mentioned this on Sunday, but I want to mention it again this week. Sunday morning, the 31st of March, will be the last Sunday Morning Melodies for a month. It's going to have a rest for the calendar month of April, and it will come back on Sunday, the 5th of May, and it really will come back. I love the programme. It just needs a little bit of a break, and I need a little bit of a break from it with the podcast and the live shows and all of that. Tomorrow morning, the podcast will be online early as usual, and I'm back tomorrow at 4 o'clock UK time with Wednesday's Richie Allen Radio Show. You enjoy the rest of your Tuesday, and I hope the Welsh do it tonight. You know that? I hope the Welsh do it. Closing out today with Frankie Valli. Until next time, from your BBG. Bye now. You're just too good to be true.